International Capital Market Insights from ICMA.
Hello, my name is Arthur Carabia. I'm in charge of running the Secretariat of the Asset Management and Investor Council, and also the Covered Bond Investor Council of ICMA. I'm joined today by three special guests to discuss the impact of the COVID-19 on covered bonds. First, we have Sabrina Mies, who's a covered bond analyst at Elava. Then we have Thomas Kors, who is also from Elava and who heads the FIG and SSA origination and syndicate and sales. Finally, we have Daniel Rauch, who is the portfolio manager and head of covered bond research at Union Investment. Maybe Thomas, if you don't mind to start, can we just have a brief recap on what's covered bond? What kind of asset class are we talking about?
Sure. Thank you very much. Covered bonds have been pretty much one of the most successful asset classes over the last decades. They've seen a proliferation across European jurisdictions to start with, originating in a number of core European countries like Germany, Denmark, Sweden, France, and moved all their way basically through all the countries of the European Union. Had an attempt at getting a foothold in the US, didn't manage to do so, but they did so in Canada, up to Australia, New Zealand, and even as far away as Singapore, and most recently in terms of euro covered bond issues, also South Korea. So in that respect, they are an old asset class. There have been covered bonds in some form or another already since the 18th century. There have been covered bonds being issued from North African states at the turn of the last century. I'm not talking about the 20th, but the 19th actually. And they had a pretty good run through most crises, ensuring access to long-term funding, especially for the reconstruction or construction of housing especially, but also for the refinancing of public sector assets. And they have been subject of several ECB purchasing programs in recent years, starting with the financial markets crisis in 2007 to 2010, and having had a sort of a rehash of these activities most recently in the current COVID pandemic. The overall asset class is approaching something in the region of 3 trillion euros, but that includes a fair share also of dollar issues and other currencies. But the lion's share of that market is still euros. And in terms of that, you can probably look at about 1.5 to 1.6 trillion of issues worth in euros, most of them coming from the eurozone. But as I said, countries like Canada and Australia and New Zealand also had a fair share of recent new issues. And that's what we're talking about now, because unlike some other asset classes in the fixed income market, covered bonds have enjoyed a fairly high degree of stability in terms of spreads. Sure, in some of the more recent crises, spreads for covered bonds have also widened, but not by far as much as for, say, senior unsecured issues or even some government issues in that respect. Another point here is that they have gained official support by the development of a European directive, a European Union directive on the asset class, and most recently also acknowledgement by the Basel agreements on the treatment of covered bonds for capital purposes. So it's a fairly successive asset class. In terms of the general characteristics of that asset class, maybe one should point out that there are a number of specifics that distinguish them from other assets. In general, the most important feature is the dual recourse concept, meaning that covered bonds are first and foremost secured by the issuer as such, and then in a second line of defense by a pool of assets that is securing the issuance. That could be anything from mortgages to public sector securities in a given pool. And a third specific here is that covered bond issuance, as regulated especially by the European Union Covered Bond Directive, are regulated and supervised by specific authorities in each jurisdiction. So they normally have a specific law governing the makeup of cover pools and governing the specific criteria for eligibility of the underlying assets. That gives investors in covered bonds a certain preference in what mortgage-backed securities investors would know as waterfall, in the cascade, a higher rank that basically is, in terms of debt issues, the highest rank you can possibly have as a creditor. Because of that, they're normally compared to assets in the SSA sector, the sovereign, sub-sovereign, and agency sector, where they do trade in comparable patterns when it comes to spread. However, unlike the SSA issues that normally tend to have a 0% risk weighting, covered bonds tend to come in the 10 to 20% category. That's what makes them a little bit special and therefore worthy of governmental and regulatory specific attention. One more point, but this one is actually one that's driving markets and therefore it's not that unimportant. Covered bonds, especially those governed under the directive, are eligible for ECB repo operations, making them a great treasury management tool. So it's not only a funding tool, but also a treasury management tool. And also, they qualify as highly liquid assets for LCR purposes.
Thanks, Thomas. This is very comprehensive. So now we know more or less what we're talking about. Could we maybe focus on what happened on the markets at the end of the first quarter of this year? And we saw the fastest market downturn in history, which affected both equities and bond markets. You already gave a bit of an answer in your presentation of the main features of covered bonds, but how did covered bonds behave at the peak of the crisis in March, April this year?
Yeah, covered bonds, as Thomas already reflected on, also in this kind of pandemic and never seen before crisis mode, proved to be kind of a rock solid investment. And that means that there was a spread widening, but due to the liquidity thematic, I think we'll speak on later, but not of any kind of credit deterioration. So this is kind of first and important point that needs to be mentioned. And so therefore the spread widening, if you just take an average market-based index, then we talk exactly about 25 basis points. And if you take that into consideration or compare with other low risk paper, then, as I said, reflects pretty much that the market participants at the end never really got afraid of the underlying credit quality of the paper, so it proved to be rock solid. Nevertheless, there was a little bit of, I'd say, small difference in my point of view in comparison to the last crisis. I tend to, in 2009 after Lehman went bust, because the situation was pretty much the same with spread-wise talking, a rock-solid instrument in the capital markets. And at that point in time, covered bonds have been the first wholesale refinancing instruments using from banks that was able to open the market at that point in time. And this time, and liquidity was also tricky there, but got back to the market as the primary market kicked in. And at that time and point, in this first quarter, in my, let's say, comparison, this kind of reopening of the market took a little bit longer due to several reasons and in comparison to the 10 years ago. But as I said, nevertheless, it didn't deteriorate the deflection of the market participants to the market itself.
Well, basically, that is a valid point. But bear in mind, please, Daniel, that one of the reasons for the reaction differences here in these two crises is that in the last crisis, the primary markets for other issues were pretty much shut. There was at least a week where absolutely nothing was issued, not government bonds, not SSA trades, not covered bonds, no senior trades, literally nothing. In the last crisis we've seen, the market was actually shut down. The primary markets did shut down for a number of days, absolutely no issuance. If I remember, one of the first deals coming out to reopen the market was a Freddie Mac deal, or at least a U.S. agency trade. And then only slowly issues came back, but certainly not the senior deals. Because bear in mind, the reason that we had a crisis last time was blame on financial institutions. So obviously nobody wanted to buy financial institution issues. This time, it's completely different. At that time, financial institutions could only access the market again through covered bonds. At the moment that we experience right now, actually covered bonds are almost a bit like a luxury product here, because the market has still remained open for senior unsecured issues at extremely widened levels. That is true. But it seemed to be still, in comparative evaluations, a cheaper way of funding to go through senior unsecured issuance than to actually use your collateral to issue covered bonds, especially because nobody wanted to destroy the covered bond funding curves they had by putting pointers into the primary market that issuers did not find to be reflecting the true value of the instrument. That's a major fundamental difference between the current market situation and the one we had in 2007 to 2010, in my view. And at the moment, the only reason why we're actually seeing so little issuance in covered bonds and why it took such a long time for them to come back per se is also that everybody is expecting or has already used alternative sources of funding at that end, at the high quality end. Those sources were not available to the same degree and at the same speed in the last crisis. That's a major difference where the regulator has learned a very, very big lesson.
And maybe that's a good point in time to add or to come to those alternative funding tools, which were the revised ECB facilities, first in all the targeted long-term refinancing operations, which were able to give the banks alternative funding tools, and the calculus for many European issuers changed obviously from that moment on. And we saw, I think it was March 16th, the first ones issuing covered bonds, but not to the capital markets. So the assumption was closed that a lot of these issues were being retained and used as collateral for those rich liquidity refinance possibilities with the ECB.
Which is another big advantage or characteristic of covered bonds, we should add. You can actually issue covered bonds and give them as retained issues to the central bank, something, at least until this point, you couldn't do with any senior unsecured bond.
Maybe to get me right, or maybe I just misspelled me a little bit of in wrong words, was just look at the spread movements in the last, let's say, 15 years or so, and then you just compare those crises, i.e. Lehman, a Eurozone crisis, and the current pandemic crisis. And these 25 basis points I refer to are just pretty much, i.e. also not a strong signal and the reaction from the central banks, but also the awareness, and this is different, definitely different in a positive way to 10 or 12 years ago, about there is that nobody needs to make really kind of great sorrows or about the underlying credit quality, as I said, because during the Lehman and financial crisis, if you just take an average standard index from covers, there was a spread movement pretty much around 125 basis points, so times five in comparison to this crisis. And this shows you, as I said, pretty much the strongness of the market. And then the good news from an investor point of view is, even if, I mean, now we are back, came back quite quick in terms of spread reduction and i.e. low yield environment, if you just look at a volatility adjusted return as a part of your, let's say, portfolio construction, then you just can't get rid of any kind of covered bond, because those kind of asset class gives a quite fair, decent share of stabilizing element in terms of your portfolio construction, in terms of risk management. So that's still one of the most beneficial factors and features of the covered bond, the low volatility which is embedded in this asset class.
That is a fantastic point you made there, Daniel, because that would be such a reassuring thing to hear if we had the fluent primary market going on that's not disturbed by the central bank. But as we see right now, we're only slowly coming back to people issuing, because there were just so many other interesting alternatives. I mean, our own institution is one of the biggest issuer of covered bonds in Germany. But as the central bank is throwing money at us in terms of central bank funding, we're very unlikely to issue any covered bonds this year in major format. And we're not the only ones who look at it that way. Well, there may be one or two issues in order to maintain the curves, but certainly not for funding needs. That is something that has a negative impact on liquidity, which also, of course, has the effect that in the first part of the current situation, say at the end of March through to April, you only had a one-sided movement pretty much in the market. Everybody wanted to sell, and there was nobody wanting to buy. And as soon as the situation with the government programs turned a bit clearer, and especially the fact that the central bank turned up again and bought massively in all aspects of the market, then you only had buyers and again, no new issues. So unfortunately, the advantages that Daniel has just described cannot be put to the best use that could otherwise be. And as long as the central bank is in there and acting the way it is, I'm afraid this is not going to change much. So it's a very, very good sign that we now see more issuers again coming back from outside Europe. As I said, the Koreans are issuing at the moment. We had two Korean covered bond issues this week alone. There may be the Singaporeans coming back, and I hope at some stage the Australians and New Zealanders again as well. At the beginning of the year, we had the Canadians coming in fairly big amounts. So it's these non-European issuers that do not have the same access to central bank funding as the European ones that are now supplementing the lack of primary market issuance that is so heavily felt in the primary markets.
And actually, in March, wasn't that also the or weren't that also the Canadians that in a way bridged a bit the gap, or at least the first couple of days in March, when European issuers took advantage of the shorter the LTROs with the ECB. I think we had seen a lot of Canadians, around I think 8 billion of issues these days, that day in March, or that week in March, which also were well accepted and welcomed in the market at that point in time.
Well, I'm extremely happy with the Canadians embracing the covered bond markets the way they have. It's not a foregone conclusion to say, yeah, sure, everybody's doing that. As we have seen in the United States, that did not happen. The Canadians have routinely over the last 5 or 6 years made up more than 10% of overall issuance in the market. I think that's a great contribution.
You already touched upon a bit the action of central banks, but maybe we could explain a bit to people listening to the podcast, what exactly, how the ECB is intervening. There's a multiple aspect of the monetary policy that is affecting the covered bond market. So it would be, nice to have an overview of what's going on and how it impacts the market. You already touched upon this already, but it would be nice to expand a bit on this, if you don't mind.
So on the one hand, we have since November, again, last year, the monthly purchases of about 20 billion that the ECB is using is using in the market to purchase several asset classes. So the public sector asset class, corporates, covered bonds and ABS. And then on top, they introduced another 120 billion amount until the end of the year that they have available to, again, top up this purchase program and use, which brings, again, an enormous amount into the market. And then on top of that, in March, they even introduced the pandemic purchase program, the PEPP, which at the moment amounts to more than 1.3 trillion, I guess, is the right amount in English. So a huge amount, but they are using this amount mostly for public sector assets. They could use it for also, again, for the other asset classes, including covered bonds. But until now, the major priority is going to the public sector segment. While the APP, the asset purchase program, which I mentioned with the 20 billion per month and the additional 120, is a little bit more spread. Although I must say in the last 4 weeks, we see a bit of decreasing amount into the covered bond segment. If we look at the weekly purchase amounts, also here, they are much more purchasing public sector assets and corporate sector assets. So we will see how this is going on. But still on a monthly average, we have a quite significant amount within May with 3.6 billion, which is an average amount that is still above the average amount from 2017 and 18. Before the first 4 years of the asset purchase program, we obviously had also some average amounts that we observed. And here, as I said, at the moment, they're still above the monthly average of these 2 years, 2017 and 18. It's still significant. And we obviously recognize this mainly in the primary market. Again, also here, the share has a bit increased since the first years of the APP. We are currently the APP, the holdings in covered bonds, which amount to 283 billion, are mainly bought into the secondary market with 62%. But the share of the primary market with 38% has increased, which is obviously also due to the supply, I guess, the supply issue that we have within covered bonds.
One structural comment on that. If you look at everything the central bank does, you have at least three, if not five, depending on the way you look at it, ways, five avenues the central bank is accessing that market. You got the purchasing programs, I mean, most prominent in the past was the CBPP3, i.e. the covered bond purchasing program, third edition, so to speak. The very first one started, I believe, in the last crisis, but we're now on to number three. Then PEP was mentioned in terms of the pandemic purchasing program. You have the collateral possibilities for TLTRO, money market drawings. You got repo, of course, and you got the issue of retained covered bonds, where you have some of the biggest mortgage pool holders in Europe selling billions, or basically giving billions of covered bonds that otherwise may see the regular primary markets directly to the central bank. And the overall effect to date of all of this is that something in the region of 20% to 25% of all eligible euro-denominated covered bonds are already held by the ECB. So that's taking material away from Daniel and his peers. We're talking about something approaching 300 billion euros worth of covered bonds that the ECB is holding.
May I ask, why is the ECB intervening? You all describe a pretty much resilient asset class during the crisis. And I know if they wouldn't be purchasing covered bonds, still you would be affected by all the measures you've just described, Thomas. But why are they acting on this market and have a standing position on this market? And what's the rationale behind
it? Let's put it this way. Before the pandemic, one of the biggest rationales that was basically sold to the market as such is that this is the one asset class we really want to support, i.e., the governments of the European Union, the regulators of the various issuers have made a pretty strong commitment in various situations during the financial crisis initiated by Lehman and the years following that covered bonds are an instrument worth of protection. And therefore, they have said, look, we're going to make sure that issuers do not face substantial execution risk because we're there in the primary market, but we're not going to take over the primary market. We'll limit ourselves to a certain percentage maximum of any issuance that comes to market. However, they basically also, of course, realized at some stage later when they needed to intervene stronger in markets to prop up these others, that this is the easiest market to enter because it actually had the biggest stability of spreads in the whole system. And that's why we had a situation where we got a lot of support that most people actually did not really feel necessary. But the psychological effect of that is that covered bonds are now a market nobody speaks about because nothing bad is happening there. The market functions. The ECB and other central banks, as a matter of fact, a number of central banks, both inside Europe and outside of Europe, but not part of the ECB, have also joined as big and major investors across the whole tenor curve. That we haven't seen to the same degree in the past. But one of the reasons as well, of course, if you want to buy high-grade assets in that respect, there was not that much available until the current crisis. Issuance of SSA transactions this year is up tremendously over last year. In the German federal states, for example, we have now already crossed the overall issuance for all of last year. And most of the federal states have not even issued half of what they announced they will issue. So you can see here that the dynamics of supply have changed a little bit, which is probably one of the reasons also why we see in the last couple of transactions coming from the covered bond market. Even though we didn't have as many as in the past, the ECB did not push as hard as they used to participate. So they have sent this little, this very strong signal over the last decade. Yes, we're here to support this market, but we do realize that we do not have to do that. It's a nice thing to keep spreads at a certain level. It's also a nice way to take away execution risk, but the market can handle most of that by itself. So it may be more interesting to look at the deluge of other deals coming out. And now the range available to the ECB to participate is much bigger than it was in the last crisis. At the moment, they can buy almost anything. In the last crisis, it was really limited to a number of SSA issuers and the covered bond market. And as I said, the reason why they did that initially is it was the easiest market to access. And it was one that had a strong political following and sort of a necessity to ensure the public that their money is still safe. Because guess what? A lot of covered bond investments in the past have come from people that are also supplying the pensions and manage the life savings of a lot of citizens in the European Union. I'm talking not about only fund managers as Daniel here, but also life insurance companies and a lot of asset managers that are liability-driven investors.
So it seems that you're saying it's a political decision rather than a reaction to deteriorating ratings of covered bonds.
Absolutely.
Do you anticipate though, we don't really know exactly what the impact of this crisis will be, but could it be potentially, deterioration of covered bond ratings due to banks' credit quality being downgraded or underlying asset not performing accordingly?
As Sabrina is a former rating agency analyst, I suppose she's the best to answer that.
Well, on the one hand side, you could say if you look at all the rating actions that we have seen since March, there is obviously a certain deterioration in the banking world, in the banking market, and in many banking systems. So we have some banking systems on negative outlooks. we've seen at least really through all the countries outlook changes to negative. We've also seen quite a few banks being downgraded already by one notch, and also to a degree where obviously the threshold is a problem maybe for the one or other bank treasurer or bank investor, because we are getting close to certain regulatory levels like AA- or even lower, a single A- or BBB-, like in Italy, in respect of the bank on the banking side. But on the covered bond side, we have been quite stable. We've seen a few outlook changes, especially with respect to those issuers that are in the lower rating levels, so in the BBB category, like in Italy, where there is no kind of rating cushion to the rating of the covered bonds. So they are kind of automatically linked. If the issuer is deteriorating, the issuer rating is deteriorating, then most likely the covered bond rating is deteriorating as well. But these are few exceptions still at the moment. I must say, if you look at the broad range of covered bond ratings, they look all very well placed. They have a lot of rating cushions, so there's still some room for more deteriorations in the on the issuer side. And then if you have a closer look into the collateral pools, it's still too early to see if there is any consequences from maybe house price declines or increasing defaults. We see some non-performing loans increasing in one or the other Italian pool. We see one or other loan to values increasing in the one or other pool, but they're very, very individual cases. So I guess it's much too early, and I wouldn't really expect to see a lot in that direction, because covered bonds have quite a lot of features that enhance this program, like the low loan to values. So there's quite a lot of room for deterioration in the economy. And also, if you look at the creditor side, so even non-performing loans, we will see if that's really going to happen, because in a lot of countries, the issuer is allowed to replace loans that get into arrears or default. So this is still too early. We'll be watching this, obviously, but they're at the moment very stable asset class, very little deterioration to deem, even from the sovereign side. Although we have seen some sovereign rating being changed, either like on the outlook side, like Belgium, or even real downgrades like Australia or Italy, or lately Canada. But again, here, firstly, in most cases, the issuer ratings are not directly linked to that and are not moving directly. And similar with the covered bonds, there is typically still cushion to the sovereign rating as well. Again, the exception Italy, where the country ceiling is already lower. And so most of the changes have come and probably will come still from that part of the European area.
One thing I'd like to add on that, the key takeaway, I think, from what Sabrina has just nicely summarized, is that we do not at the moment see any pressure for rating downgrades. I wouldn't expect them due to changes in the collateral pool or deterioration of the collateral pool. I think that at the moment, the factors that are mostly under concern here would be sovereign downgrades or senior bank downgrades that would have a notch-on effect in some cases, but certainly not all. But when you look at the real estate markets underlying, also bear in mind that we did not only have covered bond regulation in the form of the directive and other changes in the national laws, but we also had in most covered bond jurisdictions in recent years pretty strict improvements, or rather a sort of harshenings basically, of the underlying mortgage origination laws. So a lot of banks now have to do a much bigger part of due diligence in order to originate a mortgage than they used to only 5 years ago. The amount of paperwork you have to deliver in most of the countries here now is amazing. And because of that, the safeguards that Sabrina has just mentioned are much tougher than they used to be, and they were pretty good to start with. We did not really have a subprime loan crisis in mortgages in most European jurisdictions. We did not have underlying housing crisis in most jurisdictions, even in the financial crisis. Yes, you had the story with some of the southern European countries and maybe some of the Anglo-Saxon ones. There was also one Nordic one. But most of core Europe did not have anything like a real crisis in the real estate markets in the last 10 years. And the jury is still out whether COVID-19 will cause one. At the moment, all the data that we see do not imply that.
Maybe from an investor's point of view, because obviously one would like get to more, let's say, knowledge about what you're reading your credit, i.e. default risk in the worst case, is about. And I mean, obviously, currently we just, and I'm quite in the same camp as Sabrina already mentioned, if you do like a regression or try to model it, then you see that really the credit quality of the pool is that factor that really the least dramatic effect on any kind of evaluation. So it's really much more the country and the bank on the senior or unsecured basis as the collateral pool. But nevertheless, a part of our credit work obviously is exactly the composition of the credit of the cover pool. And obviously currently one of the, let's say, one of the more interesting parts is the evolution of those payment holidays or moratoriums and how they will find their way into the NPVs and in the calculation of the asset cover test. But then, as of now, I'm from investor's point of view, I'm really not afraid that we're going to see a huge deterioration, this kind of stemming out of this aspect. The credit quality will not suffer that much because of these payment holidays. And even if there is a deterioration to some degree, we are of the opinion that the embedded over-collateralization is a good leeway or a mechanism to handle that. So you really don't need to be, let's say, afraid of in future about a less good quality that you have going to be in your cover pools. So from a point of investor, we still feel rock solid and also taking up the rating discussion. Don't forget, looking at on an index level, we are talking still about a AAA-rated asset class or an index. So there's a lot of it can't get better, and there's a lot of leeway to really, if there are some downgrades that on an index basis, you would end up just figuring or mention or making up some numbers. If you would end up with a double A or even less rating, there's a lot of leeway that you have.
Daniel, if we may, I would like to speak with you. And there was an interesting comment made by Thomas earlier saying that the ECB was taking some paper away from you that you'd like to invest in. You already touched upon about why it's a relevant instrument for investors, but I wouldn't mind for you to expand a bit. Who are investing, who is the buy side investing in covered bonds? What kind of clients are looking to purchase that kind of asset class and for what reasons?
As of now, just looking, let's say, into our client base, obviously the biggest part of our demand, which is still rather large and maybe comparison, because we are one of the larger investors, or even on a European scale, is stemming out from the bank side, i.e. LCR-driven investments. So this is still one of the most important demanders for those kind of paper. The share of, let's say, on an aggregate basis, if you have a fixed income portfolio where you can largely diversify the allocation of covered bonds, and this is not, as I said, due to the quality, is much of this kind of even maybe longer lasting low yield environment, the allocation in covered bonds obviously got down because we need to look for other sources of return. But nevertheless, as I said, due to a portfolio construction perspective, we are of the opinion that you can't miss this kind of asset class. And the current situation proved quite perfect for that, because this has been the rock solid part of any kind of portfolio that we got in the last couple of, the last 2 or 3 months. So it's much more like this LCR investment that is around. And if you look at this kind of book stats that usually are released when primary deals are out, and you look at the, let's say, average split between the, let's say, well-known usual suspects, i.e. treasury, central banks, insurance, and real money as asset managers as we are, you see, but this is nothing that is due to this current pandemic. This is a longer-lasting theme, i.e. linked to the ECB demand, that the share of real demand, real money investors got down over the course of the last couple of years. As I said, the low yield finds its way there. But nevertheless, the demand is there. And I think looking in future, it will be the same, at least as speaking for our company.
Maybe I can add to that from a syndicate point of view. looking at order book of primary transactions that Daniel has just referred to, you basically see, indeed, in recent years, a stronger and stronger participation of banks because of the LCR reasons that Daniel has just mentioned. Recently, we've also seen a stronger interest from traders, i.e. the trading desks of banks, because they seem to be of the opinion, or at least over the last 2 months, there have been, that the spread widening, as little as we have seen it, was worth the positioning in order to take profits later on. And of course, don't forget, there's also the trade to be taken by bonds in the primary markets and wait for the central bank to come and buy them in the secondary, because that's also taking place. But what we've also seen is not just the strong participation of the purchasing program, but as I alluded to a little bit earlier, other central banks and sovereign wealth funds and semi-governmental organizational investors are coming in droves at the moment to buy covered bonds. And they are not quite as spread sensitive as one may think. They look at this in relative value terms. So a bond that, say, a German Pfandbrief that may look super expensive compared to a Korean one will still have value to a central bank located in Central Europe or in Northern Europe, for that matter, whereas the Korean one may be more interesting for Asian investors with a central bank background. Whatever the outcome of that definition is, there is a stronger showing of governmental organizations in covered bond primary books than ever before.
Maybe also to add, we haven't touched upon the sustainability part of that asset class, but when Thomas is talking about other central banks, then I always think about the pension funds and the retirement funds, which also have a great interest in that asset class. And especially, I guess, there is a label like a green label or a social label attached to it.
Maybe Sabrina, you last time we spoke, you mentioned potential role for the covered bonds to fund municipalities. Is that something you'd like to touch upon?
Yes, why not? I mean, especially obviously as Helaba is the biggest public sector covered bond issuer in Germany. So obviously we have a special eye, I guess, on public sector subjects. And with the pandemic crisis now, you know that in all countries and also in Germany, the public sector has a big funding need. I mean, a lot of tax income is missing. We have big shortfalls here. So for 2020, there is an estimate about 81 billion that is missing. And until 2024, so in a 4 years time, we are going to miss more than 300 billion tax income. So the public sector side is missing that from companies and so on. And just as a comparison to the financial crisis, there was also a four-year time period amount that was calculated. And here they missed only 200 billion tax income. So it's even more than in the financial crisis that the experts in that segment are expecting public sector institutions to miss from tax income. So there is a big funding need on that side in Germany, I guess, and on other countries as well. And the interesting and exciting question now is, how will local and regional authorities fund or raise funds in the next years? We know obviously that the German Bund is going to the market 100% and is funding itself. Regions typically are funding also for the major part via the capital markets, so about 65%. But still, there are some loans that are financed by credit institutions, and especially obviously the municipalities here in Germany are refinancing themselves to a big degree via loans. And so the question will be how this will go on, and will something end up in the cover pools, and in that way help maybe the public sector segment of the covered bonds to get a new dynamic, which had lost a bit in the last couple of years. I guess that there is a big chance that some of the funding will end up with the credit institutions. There are good relationships already now. German covered bond issuers are financing quite a large extent public sector institutions, be it loans to municipalities or loans to their participations, institutions like the energy institutions or hospitals. So I guess, yes, I think this is a possibility, and we are very curious to see if this is boosting a bit that segment.
Maybe we could handle by me asking you, what would be your main wish you want to address to policymaker regarding covered bonds?
I mean, from my perspective, I guess It's in that specific situation, in that issuers are at the moment, it's helpful if there is a good balanced view, and there were very balanced decisions in terms of your regulations and making regulations a bit more simpler and less burdensome maybe in that situation, because obviously credit institutions have quite a lot of work now to do and are important to advance loans to the real economy. They also obviously want to do this quite climate friendly, and also, but from that part of where we are now seeing where the green finance plan is ruling out, and there's a possibility there's much more administrative work coming to banks, much more rules, which is probably not very helpsome, especially in that time now at the moment. I guess that would be my wish, to have very balanced decisions and in terms of regulation. Also thinking about Basel III, obviously.
Very clear. Daniel, do you have any wish?
From my point of view, the entire concept of covered bonds and from a research point of view, my interesting reason is why we still like these asset classes. That is an asset class that is, so to speak, easy to research, i.e. it's a simple concept, but simple in the most positive way one can imagine. There's quite clear what we're talking about, and all, let's say, the changes on the directives had to deal with this kind of finding a right balance between not getting to get, let's say, enough room for future developments or the asset class, but at the same degree, it's really, as I said, important to keep the concept of keeping it simple, even at a point of an investor to do the research, to balance this kind in a proper way. And that would be my main wish for future, to really be able and getting in contact with also the buy side to find this right balance between, let's say, future development, maybe new developments in the market, but still keep it simple.
Very clear. And Thomas, you want to conclude?
My wish is that the governments and the regulators and the central banks that look at covered bonds continue to give us, or this market, their seal of approval. I think that has been a very, very important thing. And it's thanks to the ECBC, the European Covered Bond Council, amongst other people, to have reached this directive, which I think is a great instrument to make life easier also for people like Daniel. I mean, Daniel, as a German investor, is extremely familiar with the instrument. There are a number of big investors outside of Europe, or even outside of Germany, within Europe, that are not quite as familiar with the concept. And they are having a harmonized guideline, a directive that assures people of the legality and the protection of the instrument by the authorities under certain conditions, that's a great help. And I wish they keep that up. I also wish that they don't overdo it in terms of their market interventions. I do really appreciate the quick response to the current crisis, the aversion of a funding crisis, because that's what they did. They basically assured everybody, hey, look, don't worry, there will be money available, and we'll give it to you, i.e. both the retail people on the street, the unemployed workers, or the workers on short time, and the companies that have to pay those workers without making turnover at the moment, we give you money. That was extremely important. But at some stage, of course, that needs to be cut back. And also giving money is one thing, but then also at the same time, sort of nudging the banks to give them their most appreciated paper, that not necessarily is the smartest idea. But I have high trust in the powers that be at the moment. I think most of them learned a very, very good lesson, or even more than one good lesson, in the last crisis. And so far, I'm fairly happy as a market participant with the way the authorities are acting.
Well, thank you all for your wise words, and thanks for listening to us. And Thomas, Daniel, and Sabrina, I think it was a success, and I think we should consider doing another one, maybe on a specific theme. Seems that sustainability is trending and won't go away for a while, so maybe we will do one on sustainability next time.
Thank you very much for your support.
Thank you for listening to this ICMA podcast. For more podcasts and more information about capital markets, check out our website, icmagroup.org.